official Eurovision Song Contest podcast.
Shalom from Tel Aviv. We're here to take you behind the scenes of the world's biggest live music event and meet the people who make the Eurovision Song Contest happen.
Throughout this week, we'll show you how, when public service media work together, over 8 hours of incredible high-tech live entertainment is possible.
I'm Dave Goodman.
And I'm Joe Mason.
Welcome to the first Eurovision Song Contest podcast from the European Broadcasting Union. So, what brings us to Tel Aviv? Well, we both work at the European Broadcasting Union at our headquarters in Geneva, Switzerland. What is the EBU, you might be asking? It's simply a collection of 117 public service broadcasters from 56 countries around Europe and beyond. And they all work together to share knowledge, learn from each other, and of course, uniting together to make TV shows like the Eurovision Song Contest.
The EBU was created in 1950. We're 70 years old next year, and back in 1956, a genius called Marcel Bezanson from Swiss public broadcaster SSRSRG came up with the idea of doing the same TV show in different countries at the same time to test technology and to bring audiences together, of course.
63 years later, we're still here. Bigger than Bezanson could ever have imagined back when only 7 countries competed in 1956. 41 EBU members are taking part in this year's contest in Tel Aviv, and hundreds of people from across the world are here working on the event.
In each episode, we'll be meeting someone from the production working directly on the show that you can see on screen.
On today's podcast, you'll meet the man who's responsible for making sure you can actually see the live shows from Tel Aviv and how it's done.
And the person responsible for getting the artists on and off the stage.
Plus, you'll hear more about how broadcasters select their artist.
And how many adjectives can we find to describe the Eurovision Song Contest? You'll hear from the performers what the song contest means to them.
Official Eurovision Song Contest podcast.
So let's tell you a little bit about where we actually are. Of course, we're in Tel Aviv, Israel. We're at the Expo Tel Aviv, which is the venue for this year's competition. And it's quite an interesting place because we're all spread around different buildings here. We're currently in one of 5 that's being used for the song contest this year. The arena is in one, the green room is in another, and then there's press conferences and a working area for all the press who are here in one of the other buildings. So we're quite spread out, but fortunately, the weather's decent, as you might expect. And so walking between the buildings isn't too much of a problem.
There's loads of action going on everywhere you look. Just at the moment, you can probably hear that a rehearsal is ongoing. This is the rehearsal for the first semi-final. There are 3 rehearsals that take place for every show. And one of those rehearsals each night is the jury final. That happens the night before the main show that you see on TV. So the people working on the Eurovision Song Contest are actually producing 6 live shows. 3 of them are shown to viewers across the world, and 2 of those are the semi-finals.
And how does that work? Because a lot of people will just tune in on the Saturday night, which we call the grand final, but there are those 2 other semis. So how many countries are taking part?
That's right. There are 26 countries that make it to the grand final. 6 of those have already qualified. We've got the big 5, who are the biggest contributing EBU members to the song contest. So we've got the United Kingdom, we've got France, Germany, Spain, and Italy. Also, the host country, so this time it's Israel, they get an automatic place in the grand final. But that means that we need to find the other 20.
And they come from the 2 semi-finals. So Tuesday night, 17 participants performed for those 10 places. And then again on Thursday night for the 2nd semi-final, another 10 will qualify. 18 participants, 18 broadcasters taking part in that semi-final. And they are all performing on a most incredible stage designed by a very famous German stage designer called Florian Wieder, and it's pretty impressive.
It's 250 square metres, which is absolutely huge. Now, a question for you, Dave. What do you reckon is the total resolution of the LEDs used on the Eurovision stage this year?
That's all the light screens on the stage, at the background, on the floor.
Yeah.
Well, if I had to hazard a guess, I would say 16,998,976 pixels.
You must have been reading my notes from the commentator's briefing, because that is absolutely spot on, which makes it the highest resolution for a Eurovision stage that's ever been seen.
There are also 12 movable screens behind the stage, which are 36 metres wide and 12 metres high, and they can open and revolve 360 degrees, which creates loads of different atmosphere and different ways of staging all the different songs that you'll see in this year's Eurovision Song Contest. And our hosts have done a pretty impressive job at putting all this together.
Our Israeli member Can are the hosts of the show this year. That's because last year in Portugal, Netta won the competition. In Eurovision land, if you win the show, you have the right to host it. So this year, we are in Tel Aviv because that is where Can are based. And so our Israeli members are responsible for putting on the show and basically in charge of everything that you end up seeing on screen.
And they work together with us at the EBU to make sure that you see the best live entertainment show in the world every year. Let's find out more about the show this year from the person responsible for keeping everything running to time during rehearsals and, of course, during the live broadcasts. It's Cannes Arena floor manager, Ruth Ron. And Joe went to talk to her and began by asking what exactly her role entails.
It means that I have to take care of everything that goes on the floor, which means on stage, in the arena, while we have the live shows and, of course, in the rehearsals.
You're a very experienced floor manager. You're very well known across Israel. What other shows have you worked on, and how is the song contest different to anything else that you've worked on before?
Okay, I'm a floor manager for 28 years already. In Israel, I do most of the big shows. Some of them are music shows like The Voice, like the Israeli Idol, big ceremonies, Independence Day, Memorial Day, all these kind of things. I would say that every show has a kind of a different thing to it. Live shows like the Eurovision, which is the biggest live show in Europe, has a different kind of attitude, because what you do is you rehearse, rehearse and rehearse, and then you get to the live show itself. Things that you have to record, it's different, because then you go on recording for a whole day. In a way, live shows are much more adrenaline pumpers, because it's the right time you have to do it, and you have to do it once, and you have to do it good, and you cannot go wrong, and you cannot record again. So your concentration is in a very high peak. And of course, I'm not alone. I have such a wonderful crew here. We have the stage management that are very experienced people. I have to take care that everything will be in time, in place, including the host, the singers, the props, the audience, everything.
You've got a lot of things to be thinking about, especially when it comes to the live show. What would you say is the most challenging part of that role?
I would say that the most challenging part is to really be able to think ahead and to see the problems or the troubles that we might have, and to be able to solve it before they appear. Because when you rehearse and rehearse and rehearse, things come up. And then you say, okay, well, I thought it could be this way, but reality changes it. So if you rehearse and rehearse and rehearse and you think about it and you think, okay, at this point this should be here and that thing should be here and the host must get to his other point, well, I have a problem there. So let's solve it before it happens on stage, because if it happens on stage, it happens in the live show and millions of people will see it happen. And also that the countries, the delegations will be very happy with the results that we can do, because they have a fantasy. And I think that in a way, it's our job to be able to be very close to their fantasy of the song.
There's obviously
some amazing kit in this arena that's being used to broadcast the show over the world. Just in front of us in the arena here, we have the cable cam, which is hanging and just taking a break. What would you say is the best bit of kit in the room? What's the coolest thing you like being in charge of?
I would say the Q-Pilot and all the system of putting all the songs in the computer in a way that you can really control each bit of shot, the length of it, the way it goes in, the way it goes out. Of course, the great, great cameras, like you said, the cable, very big cranes. It's really amazing. And for us, television people, it's very exciting because it's like the next generation in a way.
Just describe the emotions that you're feeling. Let's imagine it's next Saturday night. We're 5 minutes before the live transmission. What are the feelings that are going through your head?
I would say that it's a very concentrated mood already when you're just before this big, big live show. And any show, but especially this kind of live show. It's a very high adrenaline. It's exciting, but in a way, I don't think I let myself feel it. You feel it later, because feeling it is like being able to focus and being really on the zone to make everything work. So I would say that, of course, I'll be very excited before and after, and after the first semifinal and second semifinal. But I'm sure I'll be very concentrated. And in a way, I'm very thankful for having this opportunity to work in this Eurovision.
What would you say is your favorite part of the role?
I love television. I think my favorite part is working with people. And in television, you get the chance to work with a lot of very, very good people. Very interesting people, very creative people, very nice people. To have some conflict is also part of it, but to be able to make progress, to be able to really take this big, big ship and to be able to go with it and to take all these hundreds of people and to reach your goal, for me, it's the most exciting thing.
You have a very diverse international crew working on the floor here in the arena. How do you go about starting to communicate with those people if you're not sharing the same language? What tips would you give to someone working on an international production of this scale?
It's very simple, I think. A smile. If you smile, we can make it. And I think maybe it sounds a bit too sweet, but I think that with a smile and with a good attitude, you can make it. And the language is the language of your heart.
My name is Katerine Duska. I am from Greece. Eurovision for me is diverse, unpredictable, and entertaining.
The official Eurovision Song Contest podcast.
Now, you might be one of the 186 million people worldwide who watch the Eurovision Song Contest every year and wonder who exactly chooses the songs for each country. Well, for some broadcasters, they select an artist and a song on their own and then reveal it to their national audiences. But for most, there's weeks of national selections to find that perfect entry. One of the biggest is in Sweden, six-time Eurovision winners, and not for nothing. They have the biggest national selection of all. Joe has been speaking to Karin Gunnarsson, head of delegation for SVT, about Melodifestivalen and what it takes to lead the whole team that come out to Eurovision every year.
I am backstage in Stockholm, Sweden, the day before the final for the national selection of SVT. It is, of course, Melodifestivalen, and I am sat with one of the producers who is also the head of delegation for SVT, Karin Gunnarsson. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
So firstly, Karin, head of delegation, it sounds like a big role. Tell me, first of all, though, about your role on the Melodifestivalen team. So what are you doing here with the national selection event?
I have been working with Melodifestivalen. This is my third season, but this is my first year as full-time at SVT. I start looking and taking meetings about songs about a week after the Eurovision final. After the summer, we narrow it down. We have where you can upload your song. We got almost 2,500 songs uploaded this year. So we have to narrow that down to an amount that a jury can listen to. And they do that in September. And after the jury is done, we look at what do we have. Do we have all the parameters to make a great show, to do it entertaining, to do it diverse, to do it, I mean, just so that everyone who looks at Melodifestivalen can find a song they really like. Then we just put the puzzle together. It might be like an old song that we have heard like a year ago that we like, oh, maybe this one can fit in our puzzle. Or we ask directly writers to help us.
So essentially you're professional jigsaw players.
A professional jigsaw levels, yeah? Yeah, I never heard that one before. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but I mean, we need all the different tempos. We need genres, female writers, artists. I mean, everything to make it dynamic and interesting.
So you are the head of delegation for SVT, for Sweden. So how does your role change after the national selection? Take me through your role between now and the song contest when you're heading to Tel Aviv.
Well, last year in Lisbon was my first year as head of delegation. It was a real experience. I mean, I had so much fun, but it was so much work. So this will be my second year, and the role changes. Finally, we have our winner, and our winner is the one who's going to represent us. So the role changes from, like, before, during the contest, the record company, they were in charge of everything. Now it changes to me from SVT being in charge of everything, economics, creative. It's a lot of logistics, economic, creative, I mean, setting the whole schedule with head of press. It's a lot of to be in charge of things that people during Melodifestivalen take care of. But at least now I just have one person to organize everything around, not 28. But the challenge is to make a diverse, dynamic year every year. It's a really fun process.
And Melodifestivalen has a special connection with the Swedish audience. It manages to capture families, young audiences, which are so critical to the future of public service media. How important is the public service media platform in Sweden for engaging with younger audiences in Sweden and further afield?
I mean, it's really, really important. I mean, in the media landscape that we now are living in with social media, fake news, everything. I mean, of course, public service needs to be that company that you can rely on, that gives you valid information and from an independent view and brings perspective to stuff. But I mean, it's a challenge these days to break through. So I don't really have like the answer to what public service will be in the future, but it is so important, maybe more important than ever.
Karin Gunnarsson from SVT at Melody Festival, and you were there this year, Joe. It's actually, arena-wise, bigger than the Eurovision Song Contest.
You can't overstate the scale of this event proportionally to the rest of Sweden. The grand final itself was held at the Friends Arena in Stockholm, and there were over 30,000 people in the arena for the live final. Almost everyone in Sweden is watching that national final. So it's a real big event. And it goes to show really why Sweden have been successful in recent years, because there's the popularity of it in the country and SVT put on a production to match it.
SVT from Sweden is just one of the 41 different broadcasters taking part in the Eurovision Song Contest this year. All of them, bar one, are members of the EBU. And you can find out what it takes to be a member of the EBU on our website, ebu.ch. The other one taking part, by the way, SBS from Australia, is what we call an associate. And they have a special invitation to compete. And that is all explained on the website too.
And of course, there's loads more behind the scenes from Tel Aviv on our official Eurovision Song Contest website. That's eurovision.tv. And you can also find loads of content on our social channels. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We're at Eurovision.
And there's also plenty of video too on our official YouTube channel as well.
This is
is Penda from Austria. Eurovision means tolerance. It's a big stage and it's a lot of love.
The official Eurovision Song Contest podcast.
Okay, so we've heard what it takes to lead a delegation here at the Eurovision Song Contest and how challenging it is to work in the arena, getting 41 different artists on and off the stage without anyone noticing. But actually getting the show seen by millions across the world is no small feat either.
The EBU is mostly known for the Eurovision Song Contest, but we also operate the biggest fibre optic and satellite network in the world, helping broadcasters share their programmes across the globe.
It's that network that gives Eurovision its name and means that wherever you're watching this week, you won't miss a moment of one of the biggest live televised events in the world. The man who has the huge responsibility to ensure the Eurovision network is working as it should and ensures we can connect to all the voting spokespeople around Europe is the EBU's Moritz Stadler from Eurovision Services.
At Eurovision Services, what we do is we pick up the signal from the OBVAN once it's ready to go. We pick it up and we distribute it worldwide to the members, but also to the participating countries, Australia, for example, and then also to the rights holders.
So how do you begin planning an event on this scale to ensure that you get the signal successfully to those members? Because ultimately, we only have one shot at this. It's a live show. What is in place to make sure that everyone is able to see this event on their TV screens?
The basic principle of a distribution is satellite, of course. And this is what Eurovision Services do throughout the year for a lot of events and a lot of customers that we have. For the Song Contest, the specificity is that we have 200 million of viewers, so it's a kind of huge audience with a big impact. We have to play on our robustness on the and the redundancy of our setup. We heavily rely on the Eurovision Services network, which is one of the biggest on Earth in terms of satellite and fiber connectivities. And we fully rely on this network to distribute the show. But we need to make sure that whatever happens, the event arrives. And this starts, of course, with the weather and all those different elements. And it goes up to technology and then security aspects. And our job is to make it redundant and robust. And on top of that, you have the technology, because, of course, technology is moving, innovation is moving, and we need to make sure that the Song Contest as such, in terms of distribution and technologies that we use, is at the highest level possible.
It's a pretty special role that you have on the Song Contest. It's a high level of responsibility. What is it in particular that you enjoy about working on one of the biggest live entertainment shows in the world?
First of all, for me personally, it's the fact that it's entertainment, because we are a lot in the sports industry with Eurovision Services and the events we distribute. We distribute the football, tennis, whatever, ski, sports, a lot of those. And the entertainment contents as such are quite rare. So that's the first reason why I enjoy working on this project, because it's different. The second one is that it's a high profile event with a lot of audiences, with a lot of takers behind, a lot of participating countries. So there is a technical impact. And the last part is the cultural part, because when you have to speak to 43 countries plus the rights holding countries, we all have different methods of working. But for the Song Contest specifically, we need to work together. We need to bring it together. And there it's a bit different from what we do usually, where we distribute one content to different countries. With the Song Contest, we are interconnected with the participating countries, because due to the voting, they also have to contribute to us. And from that moment on, we need to be synchronized with all those countries. We need to be sure they know what to do. We need to be sure what we can expect. And we need also to troubleshoot, help and make it happen. And this isn't so there our circle of control is bigger than what we usually do, because usually we rely on us and we have only to count on ourselves to make it work. There, you have a lot of countries behind who also need to work with you to get the signals to the arena then for the voting when it comes to giving the 12 points. So this is a big work also, and this is also what's really interesting on this event.
So during the live show, you are taking signals from over 40 countries and then distributing that again to the rest of the members who are broadcasting the show live. How does it work?
Historically, the EBU with all the member countries have created a network. And this, by the way, became the Eurovision network. So this network exists, and it's even more important when it comes to the voting, because as we said earlier, we distribute the show to the different countries, that's true. But as you know, at the end of the grand final, each country connects to the arena to give the 12 points. we are there to rely on our network again, to do the other way around, to bring the signals not from us to them, but in the same time bring the signals from them to us. So we need to make sure the studios are set up, the spokespersons are ready to go. We brief them, we coordinate them, we talk to them, we make sure they are aligned and ready to go. We need to make sure the procedures and the emergency processes are ready in case something goes wrong. And then we are closely interconnected with production, because we are the one bringing the signals into the arena, and then we push it into production, who embed it in their signal. And this is where for us it becomes quite intense, because we have to coordinate all those votings, we have to respect the running order, we need to make sure everybody is there on time when it's requested, and we are injecting into a live show.
You've been working on the song contest for the last few years. How does it feel during the live grand final when we're just about to go to those countries around the world to receive their 12 points?
41 countries is quite a big number of people you need to talk to and coordinate. And there is the technical part and there is the coordination part. And we are splitting this into two. One team is working on the technical part, establishing the connections, and one team is working on the coordination with the spokesperson to make sure they have everything they need, they have received the points and the scores and all those. In fact, for us, when you watch it on TV, when the first spokesperson appears on the screen, for us it has already started 2 hours before. So yeah, the grand final, usually the team don't really see the show. They are already jumping into the voting as soon as the show starts.
My name is Duncan Lawrence, representing the Netherlands, and three words: excitement, lovely people, and music.
The official Eurovision Song Contest podcast.
We'll be meeting more of those working silently behind the scenes at this year's Eurovision Song Contest on our next podcast, this Thursday ahead of semi-final two.
Moritz, by the way, answered one of the questions that we got ahead of recording this podcast from Jordan, who asked, how do we link up all the spokespeople around Europe and make sure that you can see them at home? If there's something else you're desperate to know about the event, then tweet us at @EBU_HQ using the hashtag ESCPodcast, and we'll get the answers for you right here in Tel Aviv.
Until next time, enjoy the show and
shalom from Tel Aviv.
The official Eurovision Song Contest podcast, brought to you by the EBU.